Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand.
Madison Blue, Madison Blue. This is what I want to tell you. Oh my God, that rhymed. Wow. Put that on a fucking shirt. Find that in our merch shop. If you actually do want to shop merch, we have some really cute new things we brought back. When in doubt, you know,
shameless plugging. Shameless.
Shameless. Shameless, but seriously, they're really cute. Ours are on their way. So we can all wear them together and, you know, just sing in a little circle of joy. However, the thing that I just want to really just dive right into is that we've been having so many tech issues today. So like a little bit of housekeeping for everyone. If you've been trying to email us, we are so sorry because Gmail has it out for us. And our website, also Wix, you're on my list. And there have been a few variations on a theme with this, and there's no one else to blame but Donald Trump. And I just want to start this marketing chain and train of what we're going to do for the next 2 and 4 years, which is blame Donald Trump for everything, even honestly, if he is not to blame for it. Because what we saw work in the marketing department at Trump HQ for the last 8 years is blame everything on the Democrats, blame everything on Biden. And you know what?
It blame worked. Everything on immigrants, blame everything on trans people. Yeah, no, for sure. It's true. If anyone's looking for like, what do we do next? Like, what do we do next? It's just, you just got to blame Trump for everything. Do it in your personal life. Do it in your conversations with your neighbors, with your family. Do it on your social media. Do it because it's true. That is strategy moving forward.
Yeah, and it's like an easy one to just insert into conversation, and the more it becomes like a subconscious, the more effective it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so effective that there are people that literally Googled the day after the election or after they went to the polls, did Joe Biden drop out? Because they were still saying, let's go, Brandon. So just to think about how much that lived rent free, right? I mean, it actually wasn't free because they had to buy the signs. So they paid money for that shit.
And just like how uninformed people were and how many people made such uninformed vote choices this year. Because, those Google searches, that stuff that came out, can I change my vote? What was the other one? Like, what are tariffs? It's just like, come on, people. Oh, my God. Speaking of tech issues. Thanks, Trump. Mm-hmm. And then my ring light just fell into my face. Yeah, no, that's the move. That's strategy. It's going to be a collective PR marketing plan. It starts now.
And if you want something very more like tangible. Wow, what was that? Tangible.
Yeah, well, accent.
I don't even know what accent that would be, but it came from somewhere. But we have action items at the top of our newsletter, the GovHub, every week. So if you want to literally do something, you can also do something tangible. At your fingertips, from your phone, from your computer. Maddie just zoomed in on herself. I'm not sure why. This is not a TikTok. Maybe it will be. Anyways, that's the tea on that. Speaking of insanity, though, are you also wearing a blue cable knit sweater?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, okay. But I did not include the pilgrim collar in my look. So that's the difference here. If that wasn't there, though, we would be in deep trouble. Like, this is crazy the way that two girls on opposite sides of the country with completely different styles show up regularly on a Zoom with the same top of some. Like, it's the same sweater. It's the same sweatshirt. It's the same hoodie. It's the same color vibe, color swatch, color wheel, whatever it is. We make it happen, and it doesn't make any sense. It's just serendipity.
It's literally serendipity. And guys, we don't text each other like, hey, like, what are you wearing? Like, we just show up. And it's always, and what's funny too, it's never like it's our own merch either, which we love our merch, but it's not like we even are like, you know what, like thinking subconsciously, both of us, like, you know, it'd be pretty smart to like be wearing our merch, which it would be in our, you know, in our recordings. No, it's literally entirely random. And for some reason, this has us in a chokehold because it truly blows the mind, at least mine.
Mine too.
So there's that. The other thing that's been blowing my mind is, well, maybe not blowing my mind because I kind of expect it, unfortunately, is the cruelty coming out of the old House of Representatives with none other than Nancy Mace, who has introduced a resolution to ban transgender women from using the women's bathroom on the Capitol, and has come out with statements saying that Sarah McBride, our first openly trans woman elected to Congress, should not be using the gym and instead should go to Planet Fitness if she wishes to work out. So instead of using taxpayer dollars to do things like produce legislation that helps people and for the greater good of all, she is going on a transphobic, bullying, motherfucking rant and rampage and trying to make a point out of one person, and a person that literally has beyond exceed expectations as just an awesome representative fighting for her constituents at the state level and now what will be the federal level. So all I can say is, what a motherfucking piece of shit. And Nancy Mace is a disgrace. Rolls off the tongue so well and for such specific reason.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that rant. Much needed. Much needed. Unfortunately, you know, things like this is just like par for the course, and just like it's only going to get worse from here, folks. So yeah, it's just crazy in general, like what also like Trumpism continues to enable people to do, to think, to say, to be. And this is just, I think, an example of that, not only of like this, obviously, election win that just happened, but like the years of Trumpism that we've been living under and what kind of beasts have come out from under their like bigoted rocks, because Trump said, yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's sad.
Can I asterisk this though? Just like add a little note, is one of the things that we've seen in this post-election, you know, debrief era is just a lot of blame game. And one of the things has been blaming somehow trans people on the Democratic side for our losses.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, bullshit. Second of all, if you actually stand on the values that you have, you'll want to protect people. And that includes trans people. So if you can't do that, then you shouldn't be in office and you shouldn't be an elected Democrat. So sit down. And third to that is also like the same thing that's going on with a lot of the progressives blaming somehow Jewish people for our losses. Also, sit down. Sit down. This is not because of a minority group not showing up in the way or putting money into politics. If you want to talk about money in politics, look at Elon Musk. Thank you. Look at corporations. Look at Citizens United. You don't need to blame a minority group for losses that are not theirs to take the blame for. Look at yourself. Look in the mirror. Ask those questions. Be intelligent. And if you can't do that, find a new job.
Soapbox City. We're going off today.
I woke up like ready and ripping and roaring.
And there's nothing like a customer service phone line to, you know, just amp that up 10x. And that's clearly what's happened today. Wix, Google, whoever you are that's not giving Samantha the customer service that she needs and deserves, like, come on, do your job.
Thank you.
And also, it's Trump's fault.
It is Trump's fault. It is absolutely Trump's fault.
Yeah.
You know, and I could probably figure out a way to actually specifically make the connection, like why I'm going in an AI loop, right? As opposed to being handed an actual person to have a conversation with for like an hour before I'm even, you know? So like there are actually ways to sew it all together in a nice little package.
Well, speaking of AI and speaking of like Elon and Trump and all of the things we're blaming, I do just want to like put out there that I masochistically listened to the entire Joe Rogan episode with Elon Musk from before the election last week on a long hot girl walk. And wow. I mean, I just had to listen. I was like, okay, if this is what decided the election, let me listen. I think, you know, it's like, it's my duty as someone who works in this space, I feel, to listen. And that I did. I did on 1.5x, of course. No shot I'm actually spending 3 hours of my time listening to this. But Jesus Christ, like you think like Fox News is bad. And then listening to that, mind blowing. I was like, first of all, they talked about some guy who like the government like raided his house and killed his pet squirrel.
Oh, because God, he was squirrel.
Like,
yep.
The squirrel. Yeah. I was like, I've never heard squirrel. Of this. But they talked about this for 30 to 45 minutes and essentially framed the election around this situation. And that, like, this is what we're up against, folks. Like, this is why you need to go vote. Like, your life depends on it. Like, I was like, what are you talking about? And essentially, it's like also just everything they were saying is like what we say about them. They said, we're going to end democracy. Like, we're in with corporations, with which, yeah, everyone is. But like, your freedoms are at stake, all this populist economy stuff. I'm like, everything they're saying, we say about them. And it's just like, how I did have a moment of like empathy, I guess, for voters, of being like, how are you supposed to technically parse through all of this when everyone's giving you conflicting information and just information overwhelm as well? And that's why you just end up like, someone like Joe Rogan is so powerful because he has years and years and years of a very loyal listenership who spends, I don't even know how often he releases an episode, weekly or daily, but like if he's having, you know, an episode even weekly for 3 hours and people are spending that much time with him for years. And then like leading up to it, you have Elon Musk come on and say like, our democracy is at stake. You need to go out and vote like your life depends on it and give a Trump endorsement. Like, what are you going to do? Except for be like, oh shit. Okay. I guess that's like, this is like my guy. This is who I listen to. This is who I trust. So it's just, I just had to.
Yeah. I think it is interesting though, because like, and I don't know quite how to like hang a hat on this. Like there are shows, I totally understand like that element, right? Like that's like the show you listen to or a show you listen to, and it's a lot of information and you're a loyal listener and you take what they say with clearly like, you know, some respect and whatnot. And there are shows I listen to, like The Toast being a good example of that, where like there's things that they say where I'm like, oh, interesting. And there's things I say I could not more vehemently disagree with, like vehemently. And like I'm able to distinguish mm-hmm. between those things. Like it's not this like blind loyalty piece of it is where even it doesn't matter how many times I listen to The Toast, for example, like I didn't become more interested in being a trad wife. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's, or whatever it may be, it didn't change my alignment. It made me be like, oh, that's interesting that people have this view out there.
Sure.
But like, it didn't push me to change my view, just yeah. to be aware of it. Yeah. And I think that like, there's an element to that missing in how people think about things. Like, I don't know where along the lines, obviously there's like a, and you know, a media literacy piece to it, but there's also like this blind loyalty, and it's a situation that happens on both sides. Like it's not yeah. like party dependent, where somehow people feel like they can't ask questions, or that therefore if one person says something it means
no go. Totally it's definitely media literacy and like hearing something and just believing it, not maybe doing your due diligence of finding the information, which I personally like don't, I've never really had much faith that people are going to like go through the steps that is needed to get the correct information. And I think Agreed. That's like A, their fault, but also B, the fault of like just this information era we live in, where it's genuinely really difficult. And if you even try and it takes longer than like 5 to 10 minutes, like people have lives, people have jobs, like there's just no time for that. There's no time to go like scathing through articles and finding who has the correct information. And that's not right. Like we shouldn't be all living on these different sets of facts. It's like, that's such a core element of like where we're at these days. And yeah, it's just like, it's tough. So at the end of the day, like if there's 2 to 3 days before the election and Elon Musk comes on Joe Rogan and both of them give a strong endorsement of Donald Trump in the 3-hour episode of why, that's where you're going to lean more than likely, you know? And it's just like, Also, what are you going to go do? Go research each thing that they talk about for the 3 hours? It's just like people, again, don't have the time. They're spending their 3 hours on Joe Rogan, like, which obviously is a problem in itself. But like, anyways, it's just crazy. And I was seriously just like on this walk listening to this. And I was like talking to myself. I was like, what did they just say? Like, are they fucking for real? Like, I was seriously like talking out loud, just being like loud, live reacting to this while I was on my walk. People thought I was crazy. And I'm like, do I listen to the Trump one? Like, do I take it there? I don't know. I'm still debating.
I listened to part of it. I could not go more than, I can't remember how much of it I listened to, but it was a chunk. It was at least a good 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it is a 10 to 15 minutes of my life I cannot get back.
Yeah. Well, the thing is with the Trump one is that I feel like most people hear him speak and they're like, yeah, this guy makes no sense. But like when they hear someone like who they think is a renowned person, Elon Musk, and this like boy genius, richest guy ever, whatever, very successful. And like that endorsement probably means more, or that episode probably means more than the 3 hour Trump one, because like,
agreed.
I think everyone knows that Trump doesn't make much sense, but that Elon Musk element unfortunately holds more power, I feel, than like even the Trump one. So that's why I think that one was interesting to listen to.
Yeah, agreed. And it is so weird, like the Elon element in general, just how much men and boys are like enamored by him.
Yeah.
It does blow my mind. Like, I literally like look at him, like obviously the jumping picture is forever ingrained in my mind and like the one that I go to. But like when I like hear him speak, it's kind of like RFK Jr. I'm like, it's creepy, crawly, weird. I'm like, how on earth?
Speaking of RFK, I've been majority offline.
Oh.
But bet your ass that like I screenshotted this immediately because the Make America Healthy Again of it all. Plus the like RFK with all of this McDonald's on this private jet with all of these absolute schmucks. And then the zin of it all. I'm like, this man loves carcinogens. Like, he fucking duped you all. What are you talking about? I can't.
It is beyond me.
Yeah.
Literally, Make America Healthy Again. Not to mention Michelle Obama literally already tried this whole situation. So, like, you'll just be crazy. Like, by all means, the raw milk videos on TikTok of these women literally being like, oh my God, you have to drink raw milk. First of all, since when are we even drinking cow's milk anymore? And y'all are bringing it back to raw milk?
I dated a boy last year. And he was on this raw milk train. And like, it was crazy when we were talking. Like, this was, I think I've told you about that. I told you about this guy. He like, he's very much like conspiracy, like free thinker pilled. By like, he's like YouTuber, like raw milk, and like it's just crazy, like that pipeline of this like wellness bullshit into conservatism. And I remember like last year I dated this guy and he was like just would not stop talking about raw milk. I'm like, okay, interesting. And that was the first time I saw it. And then after that, like through work and stuff, like we were doing this research and someone mentioned like raw milk being like this byproduct of like conservative algorithms and stuff, and I was like, oh my God, it's all making sense. And like now it's still prevalent, which is fascinating. But it's just like, it's so interesting because I love wellness. I love health tips. I also like hate big pharma and I hate big farming. And I like, you know, there's so much work that needs to be done on all of these fronts. And like, we have these massive corporations fucking poisoning us on a day-to-day basis through many different means, be it pharmaceuticals or our food or whatever it is. But it's just like frustrating, especially that like the Democrats who should own this bucket, especially as people who are being more on the forefront of like climate and are helping our planet, like this all goes together. And I've been saying this like all year too. It's like, why aren't we owning this? Like, this is something that people really care about. And there's so many of these like up and coming podcasters and the Huberman and all of these things that people are really interested in because they're all these like free thinking wellness tips. A lot of it's bullshit and they're just selling you stuff so they can keep a podcast going, just by the way, everyone. But regardless, I've just been saying like, this is something that's really piquing people's interest, and like healthcare and food and climate, they all go together. And like, why aren't Democrats owning that? And even when RFK launched his campaign, I was listening to his stuff and I'm like, this is all like super progressive. And like, people just, again, he's owning something that's real and like real people's concerns, but he's just not your guy. Like, another guy is just fucking duping you, like Trump.
Yeah. It's also too, where it also went awry. It's like, they're not changing the tune of things with science. Like, we need to approach making things healthier, safer, better policies, all these things, but also like not negating literal science. That portion just like blows my mind, because I totally agree. Like, this is something that the Dems should own and have the potential to do with like the farm bill, for example, that like how we go about these things, it should absolutely be something that we're able to tackle. And instead, we've sowed so much distrust in not just like our institutions, but also science, that now the solutions are scienceless and have just gone in every which way, where anyone will believe anything because somebody random that they like said it.
Yeah.
And that's where my mind just goes, how on earth do we get this back on track?
Especially because now it's like we have this Trump win. And again, I think it's on the heels of a lot of these topics, be it, you know, make America healthy again, or being anti-establishment, wanting government efficiency, which it's like, you, if you want to stop being poisoned, why did you elect someone who's going to roll back every fucking regulation that we put into place to help save our water, our air, and like save our planet and save our babies and our communities? It's like, that's what they're going to do. And I just like, we've been sounding these alarms all year leading up to the election. And I think we're now seeing through these appointments that like, no, we weren't being alarmists. This is real. Well, obviously we still have to see what they do, but it's like, if anyone who was like Project 2025 is not real, he distanced himself. Really? Because he just literally appointed his director of policy as the author of Project 2025, amongst others. So it's just like,
yeah,
it sucks. It just sucks to like, I hate the I told you so tour, but that's what we're going to be on. And it also sucks. We can't be petty about it. Like, we have to be like, just bring people in, because everyone's going to get fucked. And we have to be, bring people into the tent and not like do it in a petty way, as much as it pains me. But this is just like the first taste of it, you know, of these appointments that we're seeing. It's just like insane. And also the like, people like, he's not a rapist. Like, okay, well, he just literally appointed a rapist, sex trafficker, alleged, don't want to get sued here, to be the Attorney General of the United States of America. Like, I just simply, come on, people. Come on.
Like, it's genuinely beyond. And while obviously everyone should care about sex trafficking as an issue, the Republicans have made that and pedophilia like the head of their, like, we care about kids and women, even though they don't, but they use that as like their standpoint that they do. And in my,
where's QAnon? Like, where's my QAnoners out there? You know,
it's also like, apparently the election isn't rigged anymore. Or only the specific, oh my God, the one that's killing me is like, there's a really tight race in California right now, aka congressional race. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is making all these claims that like, we're trying to steal this one particular seat. And it's like, honey bunches, like literally, like, you think we're just going to steal this one congressional seat? If you're going to steal an election, you think we wouldn't go for the presidency, the Senate, and the House? We're, you know, just this one. Like, what? Yeah,
this one's going to make a difference. You already have control.
Crazy shit. So they're out there. They're still doing their blame game. And I just think it's so interesting how mad they all are about still winning. Like, it's just, they don't know another mode of operation. Like, they can only be mad. And what I've been seeing so much, which is on the petty end of things, and I do have two petty things. This is first of two. One is people saying to people that voted for Trump, like, I hope you got what you voted for. And then those Trump voters being so mad that someone would say that to them. Like, is this a subconscious for you that you are aware that, like, what you voted for is awful? Or like, do you just not know another mode besides angry? And I think there's a mixture of those two things.
But that's what I mean. Like, that's why we can't do that. We can't say those things. You know, it's like we have to be really surgical and strategic with how we communicate to people who did vote for him, of being like, it's okay. Like, come here. Like, give me a hug. Because, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, we're all stubborn as fuck. But, and especially when it comes to politics. And I think, like, we genuinely have an opportunity. This is, like, my only silver lining I've been able to come up with of, like, I think things are going to be so bad that, like, it might be the thing that unites us, like, if we let it and if we are smart about it. And that's, like, I think what we have to continue to work towards as a collective of, like, again, pushing our ego aside and trying to find a way to communicate productively so that people can be like, oh, okay, like, I made a mistake, you know? Yeah. Well, we do have an interview today, which I hope everyone will find amazing and helpful, because we have the Attorney General of Massachusetts on to talk about just, like, what's next, how you can look to your attorneys general in this next era of America to protect you, to protect your communities, to protect your rights, etc. So again, I think it'll be really helpful for people as we, like, look forward of, like, okay, what's the strategy? What's the plan? But before we get into it, we will have a large break coming up due to the holidays. So housekeeping wise, we'll be seeing you all after New Year's, which I think is for the best for everyone, like, to tap out of politics for a second, because again, we're going to have to be so fucking tapped in 2025 and 2026 and 2027 and 2028. So take your holidays and enjoy them. Go touch grass, go be in the forest, like, go do what you need to do, eat good food, and try to not talk about politics with your conservative family members as best that you can. Draw some boundaries.
Do. Just, like,
whatever's going to help you do that.
You know, I light that fire, as they say. However, I, you know, I have, like, a family of three people. So obviously this is not a woe that crosses my desk. So I have the blessing of being able to be like, light the fire. Do what you want to do. Regardless, we will still be on TikTok, Instagram, posting things up the wazoo. All the newsletters, GovHub, Viral, Keeping It Current, Yappers Digest, we'll be doing that all the way through. So no break on those. You can find us there all the time, always, blah, 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 whatever. The one break for those will be, of course, like, the week between Christmas and New Year's, but we'll still be posting. If things are happening, I'll be posting things. So make sure to, in this little love break, you are subscribed and follow on the platforms that you listen to, and send it to a friend in, like, a New Year's capacity of, like, start off your new year with a little bit of, like, civic wellness and, like, having, like, sort of a good spot to get more civically engaged and informed and whatnot. And that's how you can, like, start off your new year. Okay. So our guest is none other than A.G. Campbell. She is the Attorney General of Massachusetts. And it's just, like, so cool. So awesome. We will be having her back on the show as well. So if you have more questions, let us know. Drop them like they're hot. Drop them in the, I'd say email us, but I just got an email that I know I was supposed to get yesterday. Moments ago. So DM us.
The email's questionable, but nonetheless, without further ado,
here is A.G. Campbell.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention, which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. Well, we have A.G. Campbell with us today, the A.G. of Massachusetts, one of my favorite states. So first and foremost, we love to see it. Second of all, what a crazy time to be an attorney general, like, just on its face, right? How are you handling being an A.G. with a Trump administration about to come in 2.0? Like, what are your thoughts, feelings, and what is that prep looking like for you?
Well, I will say I just see it as an opportunity. You know, I loved my job before, The recent election doesn't change that. If anything, I see it as a continuation of the work that I, along with AGs across the country, have been doing every single day, fighting for not just the things we value, but the things that people care about the most. And so I, of course, gave my team and many of my team members a pep talk. I have close to 700 people in my office. I said, take the time you need, not assuming everyone voted in one direction, right? Take the time you need, grieve if you have to, take care of your mental health, and then come back because we have significant work to do.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's the advice for the moment. It's just like, also go home, enjoy the holidays, because come January, a lot's about to go down. And so I'm curious too, like, what does that look like as of now? I'm sure all of that is in the works, and that's the work right now, day to day, is just like plotting and planning on how we can battle back on some of the things that are to come. So I'm curious if you have like a general plan that you're working on currently and that other AGs mm-hmm. across the country might be looking at. What are the top issues too that are really top of mind as we go into this administration?
A lot. So, you know, I don't want to discount the fact that even as we sit here and have this conversation, right, and I'm delighted to be here with you, that there are people, not just in Massachusetts, but in this country, living with real fear. Fear about their very existence. They are in the LGBTQ plus community. If they think they're going to need access to certain types of reproductive health care, they may not be able to get it. Even elders are concerned if they live in a certain type of housing, assisted living, or long-term care facility, will they get what they need if the federal government is concentrated on other things not related to them? So I think there's just genuine fear. And I've been reminding folks here in Massachusetts that we want to continue not only to be a safe space, we are a resource for folks. They should reach out to our office. They should connect with us. And the importance of knowing who your AG in this moment in time is significant. And then at the same time, we have real tools in our toolkit to help. We can fight like hell to protect the well-being of our constituents and our residents, make sure they are safe, that they have the best environments to grow up in, they have access to everything they would need to be successful and to thrive. And it's a continuation of the work we've been doing. This includes access to healthcare generally, including gender-affirming care and reproductive healthcare. Our climate justice work and our environmental justice work will obviously continue doing everything we can to protect our residents against hate and the uptick in hate that we're sadly even seeing here in Massachusetts. That work will continue. Everything in terms of affordability. We're doing a lot in the housing space. We're doing a lot in student loan debt relief. So that work will continue. So if anything, I'm reminding folks, we will protect you. We will fight for your rights. And at the same time, know that we are absolutely ready because we've been doing this work. And now we just have to do with a greater sense of urgency and a boldness. And we just have no time to waste. And so I'm excited for the work ahead. And I view it as an opportunity to continue leadership that the office has already in many ways been exercising.
We've had an attorney general on before, but I think it's always important to ground us in like, what does this role do? Because it's a level of government not everyone's super engaged with. So can you also just like give that rundown of like generally what, okay, if I should reach out to my attorney general, like what does that look like and why, and what is their role and how can they protect me?
It is significant. And it's a great question. I think many think that their AG is a district attorney. We are not that. So in Massachusetts, we have several district attorneys that are duly elected that prosecute crimes. We do that and more. So I am statewide. Our DAs are countywide. So I cover the whole state. So we're prosecuting crimes, including taking guns and drugs off the street. I feel like every single day we have an entire bureau that focuses on that. But we also do other work. And what is that other work? It's civil work. It's consumer protection work. It is civil litigation. And what does that actually mean? It means a few different things. We have our litigation tools, of course, that we use in the context of criminal cases. But we use those same tools to protect our residents against scams. So if someone is out there stealing your money and using deceptive practices to do it, we prosecute those cases. We also are doing everything we can using our litigation and enforcement tools to put money back into the pockets of workers. So if you went to work and you didn't get paid, that violates our wage laws. We enforce those in Massachusetts. In addition to that, student loan debt, which is a big issue, it is actually a $1 billion issue just here in Massachusetts. We are every single day providing technical assistance to folks to get student loan relief and forgiveness. And so that portfolio of work is economic-based. It addresses affordability. It is civil, in addition to the criminal work. And then just quickly on the tools that we have, because I think folks often just see us as lawyers, so we only have litigation tools. We also can file legislation. So we filed legislation to expand access to reproductive health care and to protect our providers here with our SHIELD law, for example. So that is significant and, of course, can solve a lot of issues if you can pass a law in addition to enforcing it. And then we have our grant-making tools. So all of the money that we get from settlements, we can take that money, which is in the millions, create grants to help people. I was just on a call earlier today about a Lawyer for Day programming that we are funding for people who are in debt collection cases. And usually not because of anything of their own fault, sometimes deceptive practices that companies use. So this grant, obviously effective to help someone in court navigate that. So our grant tool. And then lastly, we have our engagement tool. We're doing Know Your Rights trainings. We're engaging with people all the time. We have a platform. We want to use it to help people and to keep them safe. And so it runs the gamut in terms of what we can do. So I actually encourage folks to just reach out to your AG office. And one, they should be responsive. And if they're not, well, that's a problem. Two, if they can't help you, they probably, of course, can direct you somewhere else. But there's a lot they can help you with, especially in this moment in time. It is significant.
Yeah. The gamut is for sure the right way to put that, which is fine, because that's been like my word of the day too. So we're all about the gamut.
We're doing a lot.
We are. And I am so excited about that. And I'm also excited to hear the fact that you are behind the Reproductive Justice Unit within the AG's office. And for those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about what that unit does, what it focuses on, and also like how it came to be?
So our Reproductive Justice Unit, I'm so proud of this unit because it's the first time in the history of the office. And even before the election, right, attacks on our reproductive rights and access to reproductive health care were happening all across the country. Post-Dobbs, yes, post that Supreme Court case, but even before then, you had states where it was still difficult for people to access reproductive health care. And I often have to remind folks, reproductive health care is more than an abortion. Even regardless of how you feel about that issue, it is a full spectrum of care that women and people and girls need in order to live healthy lives. And so this Reproductive Justice Unit was an opportunity to look at the work we were doing in this space, but to make sure it was actually more intersectional across the office. That, for example, our technology division was talking to our consumer protection division and talking to our healthcare division. You needed someone to coordinate all of that work, even though each division was doing reproductive healthcare work. So it is much more coordinated. It is also much more intersectional. So through this same unit, we're not only protecting access to reproductive rights and healthcare, we're also protecting access to gender-affirming care here in Massachusetts and across the country. We're also taking on Black maternal health disparities that also exist, including here in Massachusetts. Even though I would say we have the best hospitals in the world, we still have those disparities here. So it's really intersectional. The work is busy, to say the least. And this unit is doing some amazing work in the context of what we're seeing locally and nationally on repro.
Yeah. And it is such incredible work. And like you said, since Dobbs, but even before that, it's like been such necessary work. And as we enter next year and the years following, it's going to be even more so. And I'm curious, like, what that work will continue to look like with a potential like national abortion ban, potential bans on birth control. Like, what does that look like on the state level? I think there's a lot of questions around that with people, especially in blue states. We're all in blue states here and are used to having, you know, our reproductive health care protected. But what happens if there's something nationally that puts bans down or just restrictions? How can we stay protected?
We're going to prepare and fight for it and fight for what we've already accomplished. And I want folks actually to not go into a place of despair. We not only have this work happening at the state level, and it is significant work. I mean, in Massachusetts, we were the first to pass the SHIELD law, which is a law that protects patients and providers seeking reproductive health care, including an abortion, and was the first in the country to do that. And so we didn't want to just stay in Massachusetts and say, look at us. So I'm actually chairing a AG, Democratic AG Repro Working Group, where we're talking about how can other states get a shield law to protect their patients and providers? How can we even improve the laws that we currently have on the books to protect access to this critical care? At the same time, the same working group, the same group of AGs and our teams have been working on data privacy issues and passing legislation at our state level. Massachusetts, we're still working on that to protect your personal and confidential healthcare information and to make sure that people, including some of our AG colleagues across the aisle, are not using that information against their constituents or against folks who seek helping others get life-saving care. So we're convening on a whole host of issues. And when it comes to any potential national ban, this is where we mobilize, like we always have done, not only at the federal level, but also at the state level. And I actually think it's going to go more and more back to the states. And this is where us in the blue states have to really step up and support our colleagues in, say, Arizona. Mm-hmm. I connect with AG Mays quite a bit. Or even New Mexico. It's blue, but AG Torres is doing great work. How can we support him? California, of course, is blue. How do we make sure that they continue to step up? So we're all in this together. And we've been doing the work. And if anything, we know what's necessary going forward. And we also get the magnitude that this is life-saving work. I'm a mom of two beautiful boys and blessed to have had everything I would need to be successful in my pregnancies. I can't stress, and as you all know, this is life-saving. There are folks who are not alive today because they didn't get access to the critical care that they needed. We understand that. And so we're going to fight using every tool that we have and do it unapologetically and bold to protect our people and their healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those
things. We're not wasting any
time. Good. Which we love to see. You know, it's funny. Maddie and I were chatting about this last week, just reactions from the election results and how we were feeling and where we were at in that process. And once you feel like you got over the shock, or it's like, no, it's go time. Like, we have stuff to be working on. We have things to be organizing, people to be organizing. Like, let's be getting our ducks in a row. And almost that work, that bringing of people together, still is so exciting and so inspiring. And there's so much that can be done. So, like, let's do what we can do, is at least how, like, I definitely feel about it. And I know that your office is very much running in the same capacity. And I'm really curious from like an inspo point of view, like for anyone listening, they feel a little like down in the dumps about where things are going. Like, what would you tell them in terms of giving them a little bit of hope and giving them a spot to take action?
Mm-hmm. One, not to go to a place of hopelessness. And I know it's so easy to say it, but there actually are things we can pull upon in those really dark or tough moments to get us into a place where we have hope, joy, and frankly, the energy we would need for the battle ahead. I speak to, of course, knowing who your AG is. You can start there. And maybe in some states you don't have the best AG, but in others you do. There are some folks that I work with all the time who are not only about doing the work, but doing it with a sense of boldness that we need in this moment in time. That brings me hope, that brings me joy and inspiration. I also tell folks to reflect on the history of this country. I obviously sit here as a Black woman knowing that history. And if folks got through periods of time where they were enslaved in this country, experiencing Jim Crow in ways in which we are not today, that absolutely gives me hope and inspiration to know we're going to be okay. We have to roll up our sleeves just like they did, do the work, and ensure that we don't slow down in it, to not only for ourselves, but also for our kids and the next generations to come. That history and historical context, I would tell folks, that's a time right now to reflect on that. Women's history of this country. People fought for me to be able to run for office, for us to be able to vote, to participate. That gives me hope and inspiration that we're going to be okay and we will get through this season of what's to come. Other pieces that I stress to my team internally and externally, and lastly, I think it's really important, all of us have gone through something. And sometimes maybe we had support, but I would like to guess we went through something where we were alone in that battle and we won. And I share my story about just tremendous loss, losing my parents, my twin brother, just so much death. And I share that because it is exactly what gives me hope when people say, oh, it's going to be hard. Yes, but I got through that. We're going to get through this. And I think it's just a reminder to take a moment, walk around in the sunshine, if you know, when you got it, and just reflect on where you fought personally yourself and you won the battle with little support. And now know that in this battle, you have support. You either have an AG, maybe not in your state, but at least one in Massachusetts, right? You have a platform and folks lifting up information that is useful, bringing you content that brings joy. You're not in this alone. And I think all of those put together, I think there's enough in that to find some hope and inspiration when it gets hard. Not to pretend you're okay when you're not, but in the midst of that, to find something that you can attach to that will just bring you out of that dark moment, bring you back. And maybe you just have to do this every day or every moment until it's the norm for you to get up and smile and say, I'm ready to fight. And to most importantly, fight for what we need to do going forward.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm curious too, to swing it to another issue, because along with reproductive rights, I think the other kind of big one people are really worried about is this like campaign promise that was made around mass deportations. So I'm curious what fighting back against some of that looks like as well on the state level. Like, what are you guys looking at?
I was just actually with a group of folks in the business community here in Massachusetts talking about how we work on these issues together. And I think it's a reminder that we're tackling this not even just from a humanity moral compass, but also an economic one. We need workers. Every business in every state will say there's a shortage of workers. And the last I checked here in Massachusetts, immigrants play a critical role in sustaining our healthcare industry, our early ed industry, so many industries where we rely on immigrants to sustain them. And not just the economic piece, but also the cultural aspects, the things that we pride ourselves on in Massachusetts that make this Commonwealth so great is because of the contributions of immigrants. So I have been telling folks, if someone is looking to deport people from Massachusetts, we're going to fight. And we're going to fight for those reasons I just mentioned. And that means not just fighting to protect them under our existing state law, but also our federal laws. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult, the rhetoric that we're hearing, to actually be able to do some of that without violating the law. And so, again, I'm telling folks, just keep paying attention and watching what's happening with these nominations that we're seeing, people who do not value the rule of law, because you do have AGs out there that do. And we're going to use our courts and our laws to protect our immigrants and those who choose to come to Massachusetts seeking a pathway to citizenship. The two other pieces I also want to stress that I think get lost sometimes in this narrative where people want to paint immigrants and all of them as criminals, undocumented, that it's nonsense. Here in Massachusetts, if someone does not have the appropriate paperwork and they're committing crimes in our communities, as AG, my office not only does the work and follows process, they then are deported from our state. They don't get to stay here committing crimes. So we have to push back on that narrative out there. And at the same time, this same office, I, along with my team, lead with compassion and empathy to invite folks to come here who are seeking a better opportunity, just like the Jewish folks, Irish, Italians before them came to Massachusetts seeking the same thing. We can do both while we fight against a narrative that would suggest that all immigrants are bad and only perpetuating crime, which I think is really important in this moment in time to say, not only will we protect you, we will also celebrate our immigrants in ways that sadly they're not.
Agreed. Well, I think that is the perfect way to wrap this conversation. Thank you so much for sharing all of your insights. And we look forward to, you know, seeing all the work that you already do and continue to do.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. We're going to keep fighting the fight and we'll do it in partnership. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.